Well, you know, you think I keep you on when
okay,
you get
so
like
you're gonna have to adjust or keep yourself. It's gone.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I should remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls here at the 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you're out across the country, here in the central coast of California, you can reach us at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a very, very special guest. She listens to our programs up there in the Idaho area. Her name is Alice Mattson, and most people, she saw what was going on in her community and didn't especially care for it. But unlike most people, she decided to do something. Alice, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan. It's really an honor to be on your show tonight.
How long have you been listening to our programs?
Oh, part of a pretty good part of a year.
All right, fine. Well, Alice is in Idaho County, and that's the largest county up there, isn't it?
It's the largest county in Idaho, and it happens to be the fourth largest county in the nation.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your area, because it's a very unusual area. Actually, aren't most of the land up there belong to the government, and they've tied it up, and traditionally this was used for timber, and of course they've simply closed down the forest, and as a result, they've been closing down sawmills and putting people out of work. Why don't you just describe your area and, of course, the problems that you see there and the problem that you hope to be able to address?
Well, I've been working on this kind of an issue, especially with the forest, because we are timber people. And when I got married, I married a logger, and my father was a logger. And so I really went into the timber industry and started really watching and seeing what was happening, and we were just really losing everything. And I started watching this about 30 years ago, and so now we've really gone downhill to where we just about have nothing left. But our county is 85% federally regulated land. And, you know, we're supposed to call that public land, but we don't call that public land here anymore because we can't access it. We access very little of it anymore. And our industries in this area are timber and agriculture, farming. It used to be a mining area. That's what it started out to be here when it was first settled. And we do have some recreation, but all of these things depend on access to it, you know, to get into our forest. And we're losing that. And just some really radical, extreme environmentalism type things going on here that's causing us not to be able to really use our forest hardly at all. And that's, you know, that was, I was born and raised here, and we didn't have a lot of money, and that was our place to play besides working.
All right, fine. Now, I suppose hunting and fishing and all those things. What about snowmobiling? Have they cut that out as well?
The snowmobiling, I saw my first leaflet on that this fall, where they're starting to try to stop that because of an endangered lynx, and they're afraid they'll hurt the den by running over it, and maybe some sensitive grasses when there's 4 feet of snow on the ground, and the wolves, they're really starting to try to curtail that, but they haven't really done that here yet.
But
the four-wheel recreation has really been curtailed because of the roads being gated and closed.
But of course, by closing the forest down, why they've stopped the lumbering, and haven't they had to, of course, close the sawmills and lay off a lot of the people?
Well, we've had most of our sawmills closed. We still have three operating in Idaho County, and one of them my husband works at. But they just got a letter last week, and let me read one sentence of this letter they got. It says, "We believe the outlook for the lumber industry in 2003 is bleak." And we just have word that another sawmill that hires about 100 people is probably going to close and either relocate or just put their business into their other mills in other areas. And this particular mill happens to be in a little community called Elk City. And this is where all the dead and dying trees are located, and they cannot touch them. And from the mill, they look up on the hillside and they see all these trees that they should be able to harvest, and they can't even get any of them. And
I think it's so important people understand that here are forests that are blighted, and the thing to do is go in and cut down the trees because the trees are dead, but they won't even let them do that. I suppose they want to protect whatever the bugs are that are in the trees. But, of course, this is simply a terrible fire danger, isn't it?
This community that's located up here is Elk City and Red River area. They are really out in the forest, and it's not really accessible by a lot of routes. If there was a fire up there, you know, it's really danger to the people, and they're really getting scared. And it just so happens that this year, when they normally should have several feet of snow, they're counting the snow in inches. And so they're really getting worried about a fire. I mean, this is an emergency situation, let alone getting the timber to put in the sawmill. You know, they're worried about their homes and their lives. And this particular mill up there could run forever on just the dead and dying timber. And if these environmentalists were true environmentalists, they would not want to go in there and look at what's sitting there dead. And I just happened to talk to somebody yesterday, and I hadn't heard this phrase before, but I just heard it coined of the Nez Perce National Dead Forest. And, you know, it's spreading. It's spreading fast, and it's going across drainages and getting into other areas. And so it's not even just in one place now. It's just hundreds of acres.
Well, now, wouldn't the logical thing be to take out the dead wood and then, you know, cut a barrier so that it couldn't spread into the adjacent forest?
Well, we think that's the logical thing to do, but, you know, the environmentalists seem to don't want to cut a tree at all.
Well, of course, the environmentalists really aren't interested in trees or the lakes or the forests. They're interested in destroying civilization. I mean, this is what it's really all about. And they're simply, as you well know, using the environment as a cover for a different agenda. I don't know if you've read some of the letters we wrote when we were talking about the electricity crisis, but simply quoting people who talked to the leaders of the Sierra Club saying, look, this isn't about the trees, and it isn't about the environment. It's about carrying out the program laid out by the Club of Rome in their book, The Limits of Growth, that was written back in 1971. This whole idea that, you know, the real enemy of nature was mankind, and certainly we were going to have to limit everything that he has access to, and then, of course, dramatically limit the population of human beings. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's what it's really all about, and that's what these people are being paid to do. And really what's so distressing to me, and I'm sure to many of our listeners, is the fact that this whole environmental movement is being financed by our own government, by our tax money that the tax-exempt foundations have, and many of our great corporations, and even some of our great timber corporations, and people who are have massive areas of timberland themselves, people like Ted Turner, of course, putting out the money to stop other people from timbering on government land so that their timber will be much more valuable.
Oh, yeah. You know, a few shows ago, you had a guest on that was talking about relocating people into the city areas.
Right.
You know, we're living that right here, because if this mill goes down in this small community, those people won't be able to stay there, and they are in the forest. You know, I'm sure they don't want any people in a place like that. And those people are going to have to move. You know, they'll have to leave there, and we're just losing everything we have. And in the last, oh, I'm not sure just how many years, 4 or 5 years, we've lost 400 students out of our public school system here.
Well, now, of course, how many people actually live in Idaho County?
You know, I was going to look up the actual population.
Oh,
we have 9,000 registered voters, so
okay, see, well,
that'll give you an idea.
So it's not heavily populated, but these are good people. And, of course, they're feeling the end result of this environmental movement. Now, how was it that you happened to run for office, and how did you win? Because I understand that the regular newspaper up there, the Daily Newspaper, did everything they could to discredit you.
They sure did. Well, the reason I ran was because I'd been watching things really go a way I don't like observing at all. And I can see our county just sinking into no budget, just, you know, we're all going to lose our whole way of life. And you know, I had somebody talk to me when I first started campaigning, and I started kind of reading my literature, and he said, you know, he said, don't read it, just speak from the heart. And I guess that's what I'd have to say. You know, my heart is really being broken by what I'm observing, and this is the land, you know, that we love. We love to ride our four-wheelers back here. We like to picnic, get wood, as well as, you know, it's our livelihood. And so that's the reason I decided to run. I just didn't like what I was seeing, and it didn't sound like anybody was doing enough screaming about it. And I thought, well, I think I can scream a little bit. And so that's, I guess, the reason, you know, that I decided to get involved. And it was a really hard campaign, and I would like you to know that last summer, when a lot of these really bad things were being written about me in the paper, I would listen to your show, and all of a sudden you would say something that gave me heart again, and that would just bring tears to my eyes, and I think, okay, this is the right thing to do. But there was times, you know, that got really hard, and I thought, oh, I don't know about this. I can understand why ordinary people don't try to do this. You know, I've really been a common, ordinary, boring person all my life. And they didn't really have anything that they could put in the paper about me. So what they did was attack me because I happened to belong to a conservative organization that puts out literature, and we try to get the word out about what's going on in the community and the nation, and the people, I guess I'll have to use Joel Skousen's term, the powers that be, the people in higher places just didn't want to change.
All right. Now, what about the power structure that's there? Because there's usually a power structure in any community. There are three commissioners in the county, three county commissioners. Had they been there for a long time, or are they just going right along with the government's program to destroy the community?
Well, you know, it looks that way to us. We go in and talk to them. I have gone in, and they say, well, we're doing this and this, and we're, you know, going to Washington, D.C., and you know, testifying on this. But I could never hear anything or see anything being done, and the word just wasn't getting out as to what they were doing or if they were. And so, you know, I would have to say that it was just kind of the same thing all the time, you know. I guess there were a lot of people here that wanted to see a change. One of them has been in for, I think, 18 years. Another one was 16 years. My cousin that I ran against and beat was only in for 4 years, but he was filling a term for someone else who had been in for a while and had been appointed by the governor. And so I would have to say the power structure, you know, has really been pretty much the same for a lot of years.
All right, fine. So now you you ran, and there was a local newspaper, I suppose, a advertiser or something like that. At least they would print what you had to say. The major newspaper isn't in your community. Where does it come out of?
Okay, that came out of Lewiston. It's a daily newspaper that comes up into this area. They're about 70 miles away from us.
And, of course, they really were out to get you because they did not, obviously did not want you to win.
Well, that's true.
And, of course, the thing is, I think that people have to understand that most of our major newspapers, you know, I think there are 15,000 daily newspapers in the country. At least I got these figures out of Jim Keith's book. Just before he died, and the book is no longer available. But I think 15,000 daily newspapers that were owned by, you know, 15 or 20 corporations. At least 95% of them were. Now, is this a locally owned paper, or is this part of a big chain?
You know, I think it's fairly locally owned. I mean, I think there's probably more than, you know, one paper involved, but I think it's a pretty local paper. I don't think it's a big, you know, syndicate.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, they did not want you to win. And so did they take things you said out of context? And what about the pictures they ran of you?
Well, I took my picture down, and they ran the one that I took down. So I think my pictures were okay.
Okay, that's a smart thing to do. And if you're thinking of running for office, you get a good picture and never let them take your picture. You put the picture you want in, because if they take your picture, they will take the worst possible picture they can and put it in the paper to make you look as terrible as they can. And these people are not honest. They really are not. They have an agenda. You may find an occasional honest person working in a newspaper, but of course if the editor has an agenda, why, he won't let them write what they want to write. And this, they will take things out of context. And I know this is what happened when I ran against Leon Panetta. They took things totally out of context and, of course, put it out as if it was gospel fact. And when they're lying, how do you counteract the lies to put out?
Yeah, and, you know, they call you on the phone and interview you. And then you don't get to read the interview before it goes in the paper. And then when it comes out, there's always something in there that's some kind of a little catchphrase or something that they use, you know, that they're trying to make people have doubts about you. And that's what happened to me a lot. Now, I belong to an organization, this conservative organization called Watchmen on the Wall. And they really tried to use that against me, calling us all kinds of things. Oh, the new word we found was ultra-conservative. Have you heard that used?
Well, have you ever heard of an ultra-leftist? You know, it's all right to have or right-wing radical, but have you ever heard of a left-wing radical?
No.
You know, and you would have these right-wing extremists, but never a left-wing extremist or ultra-left-wing extremist. Why? Because they use words to alter our perception. And these words, they know exactly how they can use them to inflame the passions of people who aren't smart enough to realize that the newspapers don't tell the truth.
one of the big words they used against me all the time was constitutionalist. And, you know, that's a real bad word.
Well, that may actually have had probably the people up in your area is a lot smarter than the people in the big cities. I think maybe a lot of people up there maybe even believe in the Constitution. Maybe some of them even read it, unlike most of our judges and lawyers.
Now, there's quite a few of us that have. Let me read you a sentence that they put out a paper, the other group that really worked against me. And actually what happened, I won the primary, and they did not want me in there so bad that they talked my opponent into running as a write-in.
Well, now, of course, if you win the primary, do you automatically win the final election or what?
No. Well, in my case, I should have, because there was only two of us running. I ran against my opponent as a Republican, and I won the Republican nomination.
Okay. So
and it should have ended there.
All right. Now, are these partisan offices then?
Right.
And there's a Republican runs and a Democrat runs?
Right. Only in this case, there was just two Republicans.
All right. Fine.
And
there was
normally,
there was no Democrat then?
No. Yeah, this is pretty much a Republican state. And when I won it in the primary, it was just the fact that they were so afraid that I was going to make a change with the two new ones. There were two of us that won the primary, that they talked my opponent into running again. And it was quite a group of environmentalists that were the ones behind that. And so the campaign really got a little nasty after I won the primary, and then we started in towards the general.
All right, fine. So then, of course, and you're running against your cousin.
Right.
Okay, and he was being backed by the radical left. And because, I mean, talk about ultra-left-wing, radicals. This is what the environmentalists are.
Yeah, well,
I bet they never used that term in describing him, did they?
No, but I did.
All right, fine. Well, but you'd been around there for a long time, so people knew who you were and knew what you was going on. And, I think probably people in an area like that have a lot more common sense than the people in a lot of our big cities.
Well, I'm really, really pleased with how it came out.
Well, how did it come out?
There was a bunch of people out there that really, really were for me. And that, you know, I'm really happy to know that there's people out there that think the same way.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who really are good people. But, of course, they never heard. And what they try to do is give us the idea we're all alone. Nobody thinks the same way that you do. If you can get to the people, if you can get your message to the people, they'll support you. They really will. So basically then, what was the final vote? What percentage did you get in the second time around?
Okay, the first time around, I won by 88 votes.
Right.
And they kept saying, it was voter apathy and we didn't get enough people out to vote, when actually we had a few more vote in that primary than we did the previous primary 2 years ago. But in the last one, I won by a little over 1,300 votes.
Okay, out of 9,000 potential voters. And
yeah,
did all those 9,000 people vote?
No.
People voted?
There was a big percentage, though. At first it was reported that it was 80-some percent voted, but it was a little bit less than that. But we had a big percentage get out and vote, and I think this campaign, this part of the election was part of the reason that we got so many people out to vote. But our area usually does get out and vote pretty well, so I'm pretty happy with the feeling that everybody has around here that, you know, they need to be voting.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, so you come in, you win the election, and what did the paper do? What did the people who run the paper, and people have to understand, for our listeners, that the paper has a tremendous impact on how people feel, because that's their source of information, and they come up with their sophistry arguments to justify their position. For instance, when I read the positions my local newspaper takes, my position is always 180 degrees opposite theirs. If I find that they're on my side, I always reevaluate my position. So, anyway, of course, what did the paper do after you had won?
They just put the results in, and I never got a call. They never called me to get a quote from me or anything. So.
Don't feel bad. I won the Republican nomination for Congress in my district, and I never was once interviewed. They refused to put it in the newspaper and would not comment on that until, of course, we got into the general election. So, I mean, they played all these little games, and of course, they're... So anyway, but you won. Now, when do you actually take your office?
It's going to be January 13th.
All right. And of course, the thing is that the county commissioners have a tremendous amount, really, of power. They are the center of local power in that area. And there certainly ought to be a lot that you could do and begin to use your bully pulpit to let people understand what the environmentalists are really up to.
Oh, I'm hoping so. I mean, that's my big thing that I ran on was the forest issue. And you know, you have to understand that our county has to have revenue from the forest in order to survive. And we have lost that. And, you know, you take a county with a budget of about $12 million and you lose 25% of the forest funds that we used to get from logging and mining and grazing. We got receipts. We got 25% of all of the receipts that were taken in.
By the federal government.
By the federal government. And that, you know, kept our roads and schools in pretty good order for quite a few years. This was the way it was set up when the Forest Service took over the land. Then they had an agreement to give 25% of their receipts back to the county because we are so much land. You know, we're only 15%.
Well, now, is taking care of it.
Does
the federal government actually own this land? Or where did they get title to it?
Well, we don't think so.
All right, fine.
They think so.
This would be a wonderful means to find out. Does it belong to the state initially? Had it always belonged to the federal government? And if it belongs to them, why, after all, that's a basic communist concept, as the property belonging to the state. I mean, you would think that they, you know, if they really believed in freedom, they'd sell the property. I mean, if they've got, what, 85% of the land up there?
Mm-hmm. Idaho itself, they have about 64% or something. Idaho County is 85%.
All right, fine. Well, how about starting a program to get them to sell the property to private people, lots, maybe 100 acres at a time, to begin to divest themselves of this, because the federal government is going to need an awful lot of land for all the wars they're going to be fighting here in the near future. After all, it looks like Korea will be next. And, you know, then there's, of course, there's Saudi Arabia and Iran over there and Syria and Lebanon. And, we're going to have our troops every place fighting. They're going to have to fund that somehow. What a wonderful thing to begin selling the property to the American people. What a revolutionary idea that would be.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either, but at least I'll begin talking about, where does the government get owning the land? That's a Marxist concept. I mean, this is not land that's there for the people. That's that land there for the elite. And that land is being tied up, and the lumber is being tied up so that, some of the big timbering companies that have a lot of land of their own, why their property is much more valuable, because they can lumber on that. And use this idea, it's a Marxist concept, but it's absolutely true. And when you've got some of the big lumber companies financing the environmentalists to carry out their agenda, and their agenda is to limit the little guy from being able to lumber, well, they can lumber all they want to.
Oh, yeah. You've heard about the Wildlands Project.
No, why don't you tell us, I've heard about it, but why did you tell our listeners about it?
Well, the Wildlands Project, when I first heard about it, I thought it was just somebody's really crazy idea that nobody would really think that way. But we actually have a tape that was put on a major network TV show and with a major movie actor heading it up and a lot of big companies financing this. And what they're doing, they want a corridor from Alaska to the tip of South America for nothing but the animals to wander back and forth through. And they're doing this all over the world. It's not just in the United States. But the corridor from Alaska to South America was shown on TV the night I saw it, and they had marked out the areas that are already saved. And part of these areas take in wilderness areas and roadless areas and forest, and part of them have been bought by large environmental groups, and given back to the Forest Service or the Fish and Game or whoever, and they have quite a few spots already in that little pathway down through there. Well, we're kind of setting in their way, and we feel like we're just totally being locked out of everything, and this project seems to be coming to pass, you know, and it's something that you wouldn't even believe anybody would have an idea that they'd want to try doing something like that. And on this particular show that we watched, they were talking about a corridor for the elephants in Africa. And this guy said, well, you know, what makes you think that an elephant's going to know where to go in this corridor? And he actually said, well, there's smart elephants and dumb elephants, and the smart ones will figure it out.
Well, I tell you what, you know, this whole thing comes out of the Rio Summit in 1992. But basically, it was all decided a year before that on the Yacht Britannia under the auspices of Prince Charles. And, of course, he got together all the leaders of industry and banking and all of these people, laid out the agenda that was then enacted in 1992 at the Rio Summit. And that then became the Biodiversity Treaty. And the Biodiversity Treaty called for taking 50% of the land and put it into wilderness area, another 25% into borderline areas, and then the 25% that was left over to crowd the people into. But this whole idea, as you say, was to connect it all by corridors, and this is all to be areas that the wilderness area, people aren't to get into that. And this is all part of this whole idea of sustainable development. And it is a long-range plan being enacted as part of the Agenda 21, which was the agenda for the 21st century, and it sounds like you're right in the middle of that.
I think we're just right in their way.
Right. Well, now, what was the name of that program? Our producer wants to know it. In fact, I don't know if you heard Jeannie Soderman, who's a frequent guest on our programs, who's really sort of an expert on how these international programs are being enacted locally, but she's our producer tonight.
Okay, this it's okay to go ahead and say the name of the program.
Yes, go ahead and say the name of the program.
It was Nightline.
Nightline, huh?
With Ted Koppel.
Did you get a copy of that?
We have a copy of it, yeah. A copy was ordered, and we've rewatched it and watched it quite a bit. They actually say 1.4, I think, percent of the Earth's surface already has been set aside.
Yeah, well, they're dead... certain. They're dedicated to doing this. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Alice Mattson and tell you more about this incredible story of the effort to really destroy civilization as we know it and replace it with these crazy concepts. Or maybe they're not crazy. Maybe they just look at the world differently. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out across America, we'd certainly appreciate your help. And some people join the Radio Liberty family, some people just get our regular monthly newsletter. If you haven't had a copy of our newsletter, why you really should get one, our September newsletter gives you sort of an overview of how the government is using what happened on September 11th to take away our freedom. Our October newsletter is Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the 18th of September of this year, almost totally suppressed by the controlled media, because the last thing they want is for the American people to know the truth about what happened that day. That's why the president will not allow an independent investigation. Because if the American people knew the truth, why, of course, there would be impeachment hearings starting yesterday. And then, of course, our November letter begins to get into the background of the origin of fiat money, and our December letter gives you an overview of the occult foundation of modern banking. And this is what most people have missed. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, even our banking system has been infiltrated by people who are dedicated to the occult. And they have an agenda, and they are using the financial and military power of our nation to control the world and bring about a new world order and a new world religion. So if you'd like a free copy of any one of those letters. We'll be glad to send them to you individually. And of course, you could call our 800 number and find out how to get a complete year's set of these various letters. But if you'd like any one of those letters individually and haven't gotten a letter before, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV, warm. And then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our internet site at RadioLiberty.com, as Alice does up there in the Idaho County in Idaho, and pick up our programs there. That's at www.RadioLiberty.com. A lot of archive programs, a lot of new programs, 3 hours a day on Radio Liberty, an hour a day on the American Freedom Network at AmericanNewsNet.com, an hour a day certainly on the GCNLive.com. And so you can actually get you could spend 5 hours a day listening to our programs, but you won't get anything accomplished if you do. But if you could listen to 1 or 2 hours or look at the archive programs for the things that you think are worthwhile and things you'd like to know about. So remember, again, it's RadioLiberty.com, and then it is your assignment to pull down our newsletters off the Internet and copy them and get other people to read them. And if you want to understand vaccines and why I'm concerned about the government wanting to force people to be vaccinated, get my July newsletter this year. And then, of course, if you want to understand September 11th, you really need to get our September newsletter this year. But go there, pull down those newsletters, copy them, and give them to other people. You can copy any one of our programs you'd like to, and certainly get people listening to it. Sometimes an audio tape, people will pay more attention to that than they will to you. And never give them the audio tape. Lend them the audio tape. Tell them you want it back in a couple of weeks. And we have a couple that really have a tremendous emotional impact. We think that the devil's heartbeat, the story of what happened in communist China, is so important, because you'll see the similarity between what happened in communist China and the program that Andrew Poindexter is putting together in Washington, D.C. today. And if you haven't seen their website, why, their website, Admiral Poindexter's DARPA website. What does it have on there for a logo? Why, a pyramid capped by an all-seeing eye. And that eye, of course, is looking out over the world. Is it possible? Yes, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, we did an interview with Dr. Kathy Burns this afternoon, who pointed out all the occult symbology on the page of DARPA that deals with how you're going to be monitored, everything you do, by our federal government. So if you'd like to, I'd like to see that page, well, I will be glad to send it to you. Incidentally, since we started talking about it, why Admiral Poindexter or somebody there at DARPA at the Pentagon that is setting up a program to monitor us pulled down their logo. I guess maybe it was just too obvious when they put a satanic logo onto one of the pages there. Anyway, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd be glad to get you a copy of any of the items that we've mentioned. And remember, it's your job to get the information to others. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and right now we've got John calling in from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Very good. Hello, Dr. Stan. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
Now, John, do you know Alice?
I don't, but I'm delighted to hear of her from your program.
All right. Now, where is Post Falls, Idaho? Where is it related?
Oh, we're up
to
in the Panhandle on the I-90 corridor.
Okay, fine.
In the prettier place of Idaho. Anyway, Vince Lombardi said that a best defense is a good offense. And Dr. Stan, your suggestion that Idaho ought to have more private land, privatization of land, really, I think, is an excellent suggestion. And it actually links in really well with Social Security. We all know that what a ripoff that is. It's an intergenerational Ponzi scheme. And if the young could invest their own funds, many of them would be millionaires. But the win-win scenario here is that if we did sell off the public lands, and this has been suggested by Harry Brown, which is one of the reasons I voted for him in the last election, that we could fund the transition, because the most difficult aspect of that, in a feasible sense, would be funding the transition for those folks who already have commitments from the federal government. And those commitments could be met through the sale or else the lease of public lands. As you know, in the Bible, there was the year of Jubilee where lands actually weren't sold, but they were leased for like something like 99 years. And having worked in Yellowstone Park and seen the way private the public, look at Los Alamos too, how the government mismanages lands, and private entities always do a much better job at managing lands.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, John, that'll be your assignment. If you get working at it, get things going, well, we'll get you here on the program. Do you have a question or comment for Alice?
I can sympathize about the Lewiston Morning Tribune. It's a very notorious left-wing rag up in these parts, and I think
you guys get it too, huh?
It's influenced by, well, we've read it for years. It's influenced by the Quad Cities. You get the universities there. Unfortunately, there's several universities, Pullman, Moscow, Lewiston, Clarkston, and a lot of those people, and Lewiston Clark State College also. And unfortunately, the schools, as we know, are hotbeds of liberalism, but there is hope. I do meet occasionally people from, like, Hillsdale College and so forth, and they make a difference.
Well, look at the good side of this. All the various states, I think 48 of our 50 states, have massive deficits this year. And here in California, it's $34.8 billion. But
wow.
It's so bad in Kentucky, they're starting to release prisoners there. At least if they haven't killed anybody, they're letting them out. They're even talking about may have to do something similar to that in California, although Governor Davis won't acknowledge that at the present time. But could you imagine what would happen if we cut off the funding to all these universities that are not educating our children, they're indoctrinating them? And the best thing we could do right now would be to close down every state college and university and then start in all over again, where they would have people there based upon their ability rather than their political inclination, because there are no conservatives there teaching politics and political science and sociiology. They're all leftists. So,
well, what about just the Constitution and basic civics?
Right. Well, I'm just afraid how they'd teach the Constitution. They'd probably tell people that, you know, it was all right 200 years ago, but now, of course, we got a great new one. It's called the United Nations Charter. Hey, thanks so much for calling, John. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was John calling from Post Falls, Idaho. And, of course, you're out there and you'd like to talk to Alice. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. I think that Jeannie, who is my producer, would really like to know how to get a copy of that video that you have that was shown is there a name, or would it be possible to get a copy from you?
That came from Nightline show.
But you know the title of it.
They have copies.
We have to have a name.
Not sure if it's a Wildlands Project.
Well,
I don't think it was called Wildlands Project. I can get the name for you.
You look it up and get it to me, would you please?
Yeah, I just have to put it on and look at it.
All right. Incidentally, how did you get started listening to our program? Was it your son got you started listening, or what?
Right. Yeah, my son listens to you and orders your products, and he sent a little note to you and told you about me.
Right.
But yeah, he's the one that started me listening, and then I've been listening ever since. I turn your program on, and I go about and do my things in the house, and that runs instead of the TV.
Okay, well, that's fair. You know, there are gadgets you can get, little earphones down at Radio Shack, so you can have a broadcaster, broadcaster on your computer, and then you can go any place in the house and hear it. You can go out in the shed, and as long as you're wearing these earphones, they're little receivers.
Oh,
and you have a broadcaster on the computer and receivers on your earphones, and that way you don't have to sit right by the computer itself. So there are all sorts of ways to do that. You get those down at Radio Shack.
Okay.
So now, of course, you're going to have people are going to try to influence you and get you to temporize your position, and what the first thing that we'll do is flatter you and tell you how smart you are. When everybody does that with me, I'm always immediately suspicious.
Right.
And then, of course, you're just going to have, well, of course, you know what you believe in, and you know right and wrong, and I'm sure you won't give in to the things that they're doing, but, you just stick to your guns there and try to get people in your community to understand that these environmentalists are not interested in the environment. They have a separate agenda. They really believe there are too many people in the world. They believe that we'd be far better off you know, if we could limit the population or lower the living standards, if we could do away with roads and dams. And have you ever read the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report?
No, I haven't.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to try to remember to send you a copy of our Sustainable Development Syllabus. And, of course, it has in it the analysis of the Global Biodiversity Assessment that Jeannie Sodeman did. And it really is, for our listeners out there, if you haven't read our Sustainable Development Syllabus, you need to get it because it has the World Bank Water Plan, and it has the, the Earth Charter, and it has the Global Biodiversity Assessment, and it goes into population control. Probably the best overview of what this whole program is all about. And they really do intend to take away our homes and take away our livelihood and regiment and control us from the cradle to the grave. And, of course, you want to substitute the word socialism for sustainable development, or better still, use the word communism, then it really all makes sense. That's why these environmentalists are like a watermelon. They're green on the outside, but red on the inside, and they're being financed by people who really do believe in a totalitarian society under a ruling elite.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people, well, I heard the comment just the other day, you know, when all this started, and it's been going on for so long, it's kind of been so gradual, people don't pay attention to what's going on, but somebody told me that, you know, it sounded so ridiculous, well, and breaching the dam sounded so ridiculous to me, I thought somebody was joking. And a lot of these wilderness and roadless areas, this man told me, sounded so ridiculous. He said, I knew somebody would come to their senses. Well, these people are really into what they're doing, and they know what they want.
They know exactly what they're doing. I mean, they have a different worldview. And you have to talk to these people. You realize they really hate humanity. They hate everything you and I stand for. They hate freedom. I mean, they may talk about it, but they don't want. They want this absolute control in the hands of a few people. And they want to move people out of the wilderness areas like you are into areas where you can be controlled and monitored and watched every minute of the time in what they refer to as sustainable communities.
Well, I think there's quite a few people around here waking up because of all the locked gates, you know, onto our forest. And, you know, we're an outdoors people here. We're hunters, and we just love being out in our forests. We don't want to ruin them. We want to save them. We want to have forests that are nice and healthy. And we're not having healthy forests because they won't take care of them, but they're locking them up. And there's a loop behind our home here, and it's on Forest Service land, and we made a trip around there. I wanted to take pictures of all the locked gates, so I took numbers to set on each one of them to show which gate was which, and I only took 8 numbers with me. Well, in 16 miles, there were 10 locked gates, and that's just a little loop right behind our house, and so I really think people are waking up around here because they're finding they can't get into the places that they had been able to all their lives. We can't cut wood in these areas. They lock the gates. There's some of the locked gates back here that go over the edge of the road so bad that you couldn't even get a horse around them. And they do not want us in there.
All right, fine. Well, I know, do all the people who work for the Forest Service feel this way, or a lot of them just keeping their jobs and they keep their mouths shut and look forward to getting a good pension?
Well, I happen to know some of them feel the same way we do, and of course they've got good jobs and don't want to lose them, and they don't speak out. I've had a couple of retired ones talk to me and say, keep it up, you know, I didn't like what was going on when I was working there. And a lot of the people that really believe in taking care of the forest have retired early. You know, they're the ones that don't want to stay because they can't stand to see what's going on. We have both in there. You know, we have good people, a lot of good people that work in the Forest Service.
Well, what
we have a lot of people that really believe in locking it up.
Well, I think, you know, what you have is a bully pulpit for educating the public. And, of course, as you educate the people, you know, it'll be easier to get reelected down the line. And But you have a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to begin to bring out the truth about what's going on. And so I'm going to, at the end of the program, I'm going to put you on hold, and Jeannie will get your telephone number, and we will actually send you the Sustainable Development Syllabus. It's got great information in it, and you are welcome to copy any of this. And the Earth Charter is, you know, is so incredible, or the World Bank Water Policy, or certainly their program that comes from the Global Biodiversity Assessment. You read this, you say it can't be true. And yet, of course, you can buy the 1,152 pages Global Biodiversity Assessment put out by Cambridge University Press, and I can assure you it is true. These people, you know, ought to be in mental institutions, but instead of that, they're running our governments all across the nation.
I know. It's really hard to believe. That's why we have a hard time convincing people that these things are happening.
Now, do you know anything about the International Council for Local Environment, or the ICLEI?
No, not really. I may have heard of that, but I don't know anything about it.
Well, I'm going to let you talk to Jeannie a little bit at the end of the program after we go off, because she's the expert on all of these things, and maybe she can get you some information that you can use and help to get out there, because everything that's going on is coordinated and planned from above. I mean, they want to give you the impression, though, this is a local initiative. No, it's not. It's an international initiative, and they're using gullible people, you know, many times gullible idealists at the local level to invoke their policies. In fact, if some of the people down at the local level knew who they were really working for, they'd realize it's the very people they oppose.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just not very smart.
I happen to be serving on two local citizen committees that really are only able to do what one of them is a Forest Service committee, another one has to do with water. And really, we're an advisory committee, but they don't have to do anything we advise them of. And we work at these for years. This we have one called an Esper Stewardship Pilot Project. It's been going on for 3 years now. And it's quite an experiment. They're trying to find a new way to manage the forest. They want to trade goods for services, which means they want to have somebody log it and then use the money that they've received from logging to do stream restoration and weed control and road obliteration. That's the big thing now, is to get rid of all the roads, not just lock them off, but to put them back in the regular slope of the land. And we
now, why would anybody lumber the land and then give all the money back?
This is an idea that some legislators came up with to try to get some employment back into the county, but it doesn't work. We've been on this stewardship committee for about 3 years now, and I haven't been there the whole 3 years, but when I found out what was going on, I started attending, and then a lot of other people started attending. And I have to ask you if you've ever heard of the method of fist or five voting.
No, I haven't.
Okay, it is on the Internet. I looked it up. But the way they voted, this is a consensus-type forum, and the way they voted was hardly ever a no vote. You either voted with a fist that you were all for something, or you might have one concern, and then you'd hold up one finger, or two concerns, and you'd hold up two fingers. And it was never really a no vote. You know, you were either all for it, or that you had a few concerns about it.
Yeah, but of course, you could never oppose it, because the consensus opinion doesn't allow opposition, because they've already decided what it's going to be ahead of time. And if you're going to a program that's a consensus program based upon consensus, then they've already decided what this is about, and you're just there to do busy work.
Well, actually, we have it on tape that the Forest Service facilitator, a person one night said, you know, I'm listening to you, but I don't have to do anything that you say.
Well, then why don't you just get up and say, look, let's not waste our time. You've already made your mind up. We're not going to waste our time coming here to give the impression that you are listening, because you're not. We know what you're here, and we know you're paid simply to get the people to diffuse their antagonism. These are planned programs. This whole consensus program is very carefully worked out psychologically to give people the idea that they're going to accomplish something, while, of course, they never intend to vary. They have an agenda. They're going to carry it out. In the meantime, all they're going to do is keep you working from being effective. As long as you're wasting time on their attending their meetings, you're not going to be putting on your own meetings. Have you thought about putting any meetings on the Constitution up there? Do you have anybody who could set up some institutes on the Constitution and begin teaching the people the Constitution so they'd understand how these people are violating our own laws?
Yeah, we've had one person put on a constitutional course up here, and then I've been listening to your show, and I, you know, heard about the one that's going on up north right now, and yeah, that would be something really great to do. And you know, it's happened a couple of times, but it's nothing that's, you know, going on in a big way.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to have Mike Perutka on next week, and he's a lawyer back in Annapolis, Maryland, is putting these things on, and hope you'll be listening, or maybe you can find some people up there who'd be willing to do this, because everything's laid out, and once the people really begin to understand the Constitution, then they understand how, of course, they're stealing our freedom.
Right, yeah. These citizen committees, you know, I am on two of them, and...
That's really a waste of time.
It is a waste of time.
And I think that people have, and you ought to get up and tell people what's a waste of time. Have you ever heard any of the things that we've done on the consensus process?
We've, in fact, we've had a person in here that's given some classes on that. And that's one of the things that the group had a problem with me, too, was that we did put on a... class on consensus and facilitation, and of course they made a big thing out of that these extremists, that's one of the things that they do.
Right, but they're the ones who put on these stupid programs, and they so hornswoggle the people, they don't even understand that this is an exercise in futility, simply to give them the feeling they're going to accomplish something when they can't. They can't stand the truth, and they're sort of like a vampire. They can't stand the first rays of light.
One of their definitions of extremism that they were using in a, they called it talking points against me. They said an extremist is a person who goes to extremes, especially in political matters, a supporter of extreme doctrines or practices, and then they gave examples of an extremist, and one was sponsoring workshops on how to block the development of community consensus, which we have done, and then one was wearing a gun to the beauty shop. And I have nothing against wearing a gun, but I think they used beauty shop because I was a woman running for, you know, the commission office, and it's just, the things that they used were just, some of them were really hilarious.
Well, you see, they have to twist and alter the truth. They have to create a perception in people's minds. And of course, what they did with that remark was people could see you with a gun strapped to your waist going to the beauty shop. Do you ordinarily carry a gun with you every place you go?
No, not every place I go, but I do carry a gun part of the time because we have cougars and
but you're not
all
carrying
those little critters.
Obviously, they're suggesting you're wearing a pistol.
That's right. It was just a thing that they were trying to bring up, thinking that people would think it was a pretty crazy idea, I guess.
Well, I think, but obviously it backfired on them because you got an overwhelming majority of the vote.
Well, I think the people knew me. And you know, I've been around. We do a lot of music, a lot of volunteering in the county, and I think people really knew who I was, and they knew I wasn't going to go in and ruin the county overnight, and I'm just real pleased.
Well, it sounds to me like they're the ones who've ruined the county. They intend to really destroy the county economically, you know, as far as production is concerned, and if the policies continue as they have, why, the people will be forced out of that community.
Oh, I'm sure, you know... We're going to be, and especially this community with the mill up here. You know, they had a meeting with all their people and told them what exactly was going to happen if we couldn't get some promise of timber up there. And see, this mill sits way up into the forest. It was built there to log off of the Nez Perce forest. And so now that they can't get any timber off of the forest, they have to haul in from all over the country. I think they've even tried hauling in from Colorado. And now our rail line is going down. And you know, everything that's happening here is causing our county to really be in a real big bind. And so I kind of like to, you know, get a hold of other people in the country that are going through the same thing, and I know there's a lot of people in a lot of other states that are having exactly the same problems that we're having, but it's almost like the news media isolates us.
Well, but you see, fortunately, we can put you in touch with Henry Lamb. We can put you in touch with James Wally. We can put you in touch with Tom DeWeese. And these people are working with the people all across the country who are going through exactly what you're going through. And, you know, so anything we can do to help you, don't hesitate at all to call us. You have our telephone number. And if you don't, why, Jeannie will give it to you. And we can help to provide you with some information and put you in touch with the people who have a wealth of information. And Jeannie, I'm going to put you in touch with when we put you on hold. Has great information, and Joan Paris and Joan Vian, who work with us, have great information. So you can begin to interlock then with all these other people who spend full time working on this.
Yeah, I'd love to do that because, you know, we want to start gathering up other areas that are having the same problems and see if we can't have a little bigger voice in this, because, you know, when we're isolated all the time, we don't know what the other part of the country's doing, and they don't let us know.
Well, we're out of time. I'm going to put you on hold here, and we'll be back here in just a moment. You talk to Jeannie, get that telephone number, and God bless you for everything you're doing.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night, and we'll talk to you again before too long. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, fine.
Bye.
And so we're going to let Jeannie pick up and get the address there, and this is the time, of course, when I'm going to have to wish our listeners up there in the Great Northwest a good night, and we'll be back with you again on Monday, of course. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, then, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views. The views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America. I see Jeannie's going to try to get Dave's on the line, but Dave is already on line one, Jeannie, so we'll switch him over at the half hour. But right now I wanted you to be able to go ahead and talk to Annette for a few minutes. But now Dave Wegener is with us from Hope for America Ministries. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thanks for being on again.
All right, fine. And of course, now you told me that we're going to play musical chairs and we're going to change our positions. And you're going to ask the questions this evening?
Well, I'd like to ask a few, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine.
I know you interview people 5 hours a day, and so you're a jack of all trades, but with a lot more knowledge than I am. I try to cover all areas, as we know the movement towards the one world government, as well as the one world religion, as well as it'll have to be an economy that would control the people. And so all three of those areas are very important, and many other sub areas of those that are going to affect us. And I think we're probably on both the same page on most of these things, but I have a couple questions. I mean, I'm not exactly sure why these world leaders, and I'm not sure you are either, but I'd sure like to hear your opinion, why they're doing what they're doing. But I know we were getting ready to, the papers were all showing us that we're going to go into Iraq, and we were moving the troops over there, and we were getting ready for the war to develop. And then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, North Korea says, we have nuclear weapons. Why do you think another power like North Korea would just voluntarily give that kind of information?
Well, you know, that is such a provocative question, and I've asked the same question to myself. Nothing makes any sense if you look at it logically. But if you understand that wars are created and they are fought for far different reasons than the young men who were sent to fight and bleed and suffer and die are ever told, then, of course, you can begin to understand what's going on. Now, why would North Korea, this little tiny country up there, that supposedly is, a sort of renegade country, it can't feed its own people, but it can produce missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, nuclear weapons. Where do you think it gets its technology? Why it gets its technology from communist China? And, of course, who provided the technology to communist China? Why, we did. If anybody thinks that North Korea has been able to do and accomplish what it has scientifically, or can't even feed its people by itself, I think they are incredibly naive. And really, you can only understand what's going on today by looking back almost 50 years to the time of the Korean War. And, of course, you remember, of course, it was after the Second World War, which Americans had valiantly fought to bring democracy to the world and for the four freedoms and for the rights of people and for self-determination and democracy and all of these things. Why, the first thing the administration, Harry Truman's administration, did was turn over all of Eastern Europe to the communists. First of all, immediately after the war, why, literally every woman in Eastern Europe was raped. But, of course, we financed that. We had given the communists the plates so they could print our occupation money so they could carry out their atrocities over there, round up the men, ship them off to Siberia, and literally millions were sent to Siberia to die or work in the plants. They took all of the factories out of Eastern Europe and sent them off to Russia to help build up their industrial base, which, of course, they never could have done on their own. But, of course, we actually gave them the plates so they could print our occupation money so we could finance their occupation. And that's covered in a book called For Major Jordan's Diary by George Racy Jordan. These facts are totally suppressed in America. But then, of course, after that, why we turned China over to the communists, and by putting an arms embargo on Chiang Kai-shek in violation of the will of our Congress, which appropriated $125 million, which is equivalent to several billion today, for weapons for nationalist China. And then, of course, why the State Department held those weapons up in San Francisco and Los Angeles for a year and a half, as the Chinese Nationalist Army retreated 2 weeks ahead of the Chinese Communists. They didn't lose the war. They had nothing to fight the war with. And, of course, then they fled to Taiwan. At that time, we called it Formosa. But anyway, so basically, then, of course, the American people were saying, well, look, there must be communists in Washington, D.C. Look, they've turned Eastern Europe over to the communists, and they turned China over to the communists. So we had to have a war to convince the American people that the people in Washington, D.C. were really anti-communist or good, loyal Americans. So Dean Acheson, and this comes from the MacArthur's, General MacArthur's a book, Reminiscences. You'll find that Dean Acheson, the Secretary of State, gave a talk before the press club and announced that if South Korea was attacked, we would not defend it. And then, of course, the Joint Chiefs of Staff made a similar public statement. If South Korea is attacked, we will not defend it. And old Kim Il-sung, believing that, that obviously we're giving him the green light to go ahead and attack South Korea, checks with Stalin, and Stalin says, go ahead and do it, and the Chinese communists say, go ahead and do it, so he does it. And he is simply a satellite of these two larger communist states. And, of course, once he attacks, then we're in the war over there. Immediately, of course, we put the 7th Fleet between Formosa and the mainland, not to protect Formosa from the Chinese communists, but to protect the Chinese communist mainland from Formosa, because by this time, Chiang Kai-shek has rearmed his army, and of course they're just itching for an opportunity to go back on the mainland, but they can't do it because we have our fleet in between, and we wouldn't allow them to invade communist China because the people there hated the communists. They were desperate to overthrow this brutal tyranny that we had imposed on them, and that allowed the Chinese communists to take a million-man army up through Manchuria to come down and attack our men in Korea and kill a lot of them. And, of course, you say this doesn't make sense, and then we were never allowed to try to win the war. It was a phony war from the very beginning. You talk to the people that were there. We weren't allowed to bomb the hydroelectric plants or the major targets in North Korea. We weren't allowed to bomb the bridges going across the Yalu except on suicide flights. And one of the most touching scenes in the book, MacArthur's Reminiscences, is General MacArthur tells about, going to a hospital, and there's a pilot who's dying, and he's blood is coming out of his mouth, and he's had to take one of these suicide flights that MacArthur was required to send him on, going in over heavy artillery or anti-aircraft fire. It was an impossible mission to try to take out the bridges. And, of course, the airman asks, which side is Washington on? Which side is Washington on, General? And General MacArthur said he was going to go back and resign his commission. He had it. He was being forced to fight a war and not allowed to win, and sent his boys into useless and senseless battles. And he quoted then later General Lin Piao, who headed the communist forces, and saying, I would never have risked my troops and my military reputation and crossed the Yalu if I hadn't been guaranteed that Washington would restrain MacArthur. And all of these things are in my book, the exact references, the page references in MacArthur's Reminiscences. The Korean War was as phony as the Vietnam War. It was all staged for entirely different purposes. And I believe that you ask me why North Korea made the statement it did, because this is all staged in preparation for another war. In fact, if you read the book Bush at War by Bob Woodward, and I haven't read it, but I've read excerpts from it, and it's very obvious that this whole thing is about the New World Order, and George Bush is not going to be happy simply with killing the people in Afghanistan and murdering a lot of civilians in Iraq. There's going to be other wars with Iraq, with Korea, and possibly with Syria. Heaven only knows. But we'll be at war the rest of our lives unless the American people wake up and understand this is all staged, because behind what's going on, there are other forces. And if you haven't seen that little pamphlet we give out called The Spiritual Hierarchy, which is recently distributed by the Lucius Trust, talking about the hierarchy, the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. And they will tell you quite openly. Of course, they figure that the average person out here wouldn't believe it. But there is a spiritual hierarchy that rules the world, and they control the finances, they control the politics, they control the education. Many of our listeners would like to get the pamphlet put out by the Luciferians, who will tell you that they rule the world. We'll be glad to send it to you. It's called The Spiritual Hierarchy. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. So in answer to your question, David, I believe that this whole thing with Korea is designed to justify a war there as well. When it'll be, I don't know, but I believe that we're going to go to war with Iraq as soon as George Bush can somehow or other justify it, and Then there may be a war with Korea. But as a result of this, of course, there are going to be terrorist attacks here on the United States. The latest issue of Foreign Affairs magazine just arrived today, and I was reading it. And, of course, there's an article in there about Saddam Hussein retaliating on America. Now, remember, for those of you who don't know what Foreign Affairs magazine is, it is a theoretical journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is the front group for a secret occult organization created by Cecil Rhodes. And if you want the documentation on that, A Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time by Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Quigley, pages 951 and 952. And the CFR is a front for the J.P. Morgan and American Roundtable, which, of course, are tied into Cecil Rhodes' secret society. So basically, in this recent article, they were talking about, you know, Saddam Hussein has nothing to lose. He may well launch an attack on America. It may not be very, very, very sophisticated. It only may kill three or four times as many as we lost in the World Trade Center, or it could kill a couple of hundred thousand. But we really ought to begin being prepared for the terrorist attacks that are going to come on the United States. Now, I do not believe that these could possibly take place unless our leaders intended for them to take place. Well, the technology we have today, I mean, where they can read the writing on a clipboard from 80,000 feet in space. You mean to tell me they can't find Osama bin Laden and the wicked Sheikh Omar, Muhammad Omar, the gentleman who was the head of the Taliban? Well, in fact, the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda are reforming in Afghanistan. They're even setting up new camps there. We haven't won the war. But this, of course, we have to tell the American people that. We haven't won the war in Afghanistan. Now we're going to go to war with Iraq and North Korea. In fact, the only reason that Karzai, the UNICAL consultant who we appointed as the puppet ruler of Afghanistan, stays in power is because we got a couple of hundred American troops answering him. All right.
Yeah. Okay. I've got about eight more questions.
All right, fine. My producer just said your answer is 10 minutes long. Go ahead.
Here we go. You talked about this a little bit. You talked about us arming China and Russia, and I'm reading articles here. It says Russia defends helping Iran build nuclear reactors, and it says efforts to destroy Russian arms are stalled, and we know that they just put a new nuclear sub in the water here at the end of 2001. The Gephardt, one that sub alone could destroy our continent. But why would we be arming? You and I know the Bible, and there's the kings of the east, the kings of the north, and this thing's going to get pretty violent here towards the end. Why would we be arming Russia and China, who are out and out avowed communists?
For the preparation for their attack on the United States.
So you believe our leaders are doing that for that purpose?
Yes, and then the question is, why would we be doing anything that stupid? Well, why are they building right today a some sort of an underground shelter for Dick Cheney? And I don't know if you've seen those articles. We have one in the paper about Dick Cheney has a home next to the National Observatory in Washington, D.C., and within the last 10 days or so, there's been lots of explosions rocking that area, and the neighbors want to know what it is, and the local authorities say, well, it's classified. We can't tell you what it is, but, it's not just coincidence that that's right where Dick Cheney lives. So obviously they're blasting an underground enclave for him. They have the underground enclaves for the elite, but of course not for us common folks. There is no defense for the American people. The Russians have a civilian defense for their people. The Chinese have a civilian defense for their people. We have a no civilian defense for America. And although they're preparing underground shelters for the elite and their families, they're not telling the Americans even to prepare and lay in a supply of food and medical supplies to protect themselves. Why would that be? And then, of course, let's put this into a spiritual perspective, because we're really dealing with evil and wicked people who I believe are under the direction of the prince of this world. And, of course, God can manipulate the prince of this world to do his bidding as well. And, of course, has there ever been a nation that's been blessed as America has? But, of course, what have the church done, what have the American people done with that blessing? Turn on television, turn on MTV, see what they're teaching our kids in school. Do you think God's pleased with what's going on? They're talking today about the first cloned child being born. Do you think God is happy with what we're doing with the miracles he's created for us? And, of course, I believe that God's judgment is going to come on this country. Certainly, David Wilkerson wrote about his vision of the 1,000 fires or 100 fires burning in New York at one time. Dimitri Dutman, who had been over in Romania, there smuggling Bibles, came to America and had a vision of a nuclear attack on America. George Washington's vision of very often quoted, of the fire coming down from the sky. Our friend Bill Sneblin, being told by the Satanist Manly P. Hall that there would be a first Gulf War in 1980. He was told this in the early 80s. There would be a first Gulf War in about 1990, and then a second Gulf War in the year 2002. And, of course, as a result of the Gulf War, there would be a biological attack on America. And in the total chaos that would reign here in the United States, would come a nuclear attack from Russia. And I don't know whether he said Russia and China or just Russia. But you ask why we're building up the best enemies money can buy?
Yes.
Well, of course, in preparation for the attack on America.
Okay.
Because, you see, the real goal of these people is a new world order and a new world religion. And out of that chaos, the American people will gladly accept the rule of the United Nations. They'll be willing to give up their sovereignty and give up their weapons and give up their freedom. Just, of course, restore order.
Absolutely. Next question, I'd like to play just a couple clips to ask the question, and then I'd like your response. But I've heard it said that after the Patriot Act was signed and after the Homeland Defense was put into effect, basically our Constitution's been shredded. Now, I'm going to play a clip from Don Rogers, who talks about executive orders, who said the Constitution was shredded whenever, 10 years ago when he made this comment. And then I'm going to play a clip by Chuck Missler, who talked about the Omnibus Anti-Terrorism Bill right after the Oklahoma that said it was pretty much over with. Why do they continue? But let me play these clips first.
Well, first of all, I'll ask you your question. Well, for our listeners, though, Don Rogers was a state senator in Sacramento. He ended up being there 18 years. He gave up his whole life for us. And eventually, of course, he was term limited out. But a real patriot, a man I'm proud to call a friend.
Right.
Go ahead.
Here he is.
The president doesn't need to issue a formal declaration of martial law to deploy the troops. He can do so.
In 1933, President Roosevelt, right after his inauguration, used the so-called depression and the bank problem with, people supposedly having problems, runs on the bank and all of that. He used that as an excuse to get the Congress to go along and give him these executive war powers because of a so-called emergency. And that literally gave the president a dictatorial power and suspended the constitutional freedoms that we have. So, most people don't realize it, but I have lived almost all of my life without having the constitutional freedoms protected by the, because the Constitution has been suspended. It's March the 9th, 1933.
Okay, now that's one time he's saying it was already suspended. Now I'm going to play Chuck Missler. This is right after the Oakland 1995-96 era. He's talking about the condition of America right after we signed the Omnibus Anti-Terrorism Bill. Here we go. Chuck Missler was again involved with military intelligence, and he has his own own ministry called Koinonia House. Here we go. Here we go.
I think that America could be plunged into the Dark Ages. This move towards political correctness, this legislation that allows the president to declare anyone that's critical of government as a hate criminal. The Anti-Terrorism Bill has removed the Bill of Rights. We have the same mechanics in place that enabled the Nazis to do what they did in Germany. When the Nazis banged down a door in the middle of the night and took a family off, they did nothing illegal. They always operated in the color of law, and those same laws are now in place in this country. Our religious freedoms are rapidly being abridged. It's no longer fashionable to be a Christian. You're on lists that are labeled as a dangerous terrorist. there are lists going around Washington that describe what dangerous terrorists look like. They have an excessive preoccupation with the Bible. They're obsessed with the second coming of Jesus Christ. They homeschool their kids. They store extra food in their garage. And on it goes. Sounds awfully familiar to look down those lists. It's possible the tide that we begin to see happen may get worse. And I think there may be some of us in this room that will have the opportunity to give their life for the gospel of Christ in a very dramatic way.
Okay, now there's a couple speakers that talked about the fact that we were already in a precarious situation, and then we had this 9/11 incident. Since that, like I said, the Patriot Act came along with the Homeland Security Bill. Why do they continue to have to? I know the Nazis, they did everything under the color of law. Everything they did, according to the Nuremberg trials, was upright and according to law. Why are they continuing to rewrite more and more bills that take our freedoms and liberties away from us?
Well, because I think they have to do everything according to law. In other words, they still acknowledge that even though in many respects the Constitution has been suspended, they have to convince the American people it's all done legally. It's sort of like on the Homeland Security Bill. Somebody snuck in, and nobody knows who did it, a special provision so that Eli Lilly could never be sued for poisoning so many of our children with the mercury that was in the vaccines. But you see, it's done perfectly legally.
Yeah.
And so they have to do everything in the color of law. Right. You know, I'm very often asked, David, look, if things are as bad as you say, why didn't they take over a long time ago? How would you answer that? And I'll tell you how I answer it.
Well, I mean, that's a good question.
All right, well, let me tell you how I answer it. I say they already did take over. They took over a long time ago. But they need America's military and financial wealth, of course, to bring the whole world under their control. They have that, and now we have troops in 140 nations of the world. The only nations that really are not under our total control are the Muslim nations, and that's why we're going to take them out at the present time. But they really don't need the American people that much longer. And then, of course, I believe God has a plan, and maybe he's going to get our attention here in the very, very near future. I hope and pray that I'm wrong about the possibility of massive attacks here in the United States. But if God is a just God, I don't think he's going to be mocked much longer by this country and by the American people who've been given so much. And, of course, from much to whom much is given, much is required or much is expected. And what are the American people doing for the Lord? Why, they're mocking him. Our churches, our ministers won't speak out. They won't tell parents to get their kids out of government schools that are designed to destroy their faith.
Before you go into that, Dr. Stan, that's my next question. Why the silence from the pulpits? You're going to make a statement. you're going to make a statement which I agree with completely, fully. I think most of the listeners do, but why? Do you have any idea why?
Yeah, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because they infiltrated our seminaries 50 years ago, according to David Horowitz, and they actually changed the teaching in our seminaries, and they taught the ministers never to get involved in politics. Their only job was to preach the gospel, to bring people into a personal relationship with our Lord, and, of course, to teach them that once saved, always saved, that once they said that they were saved or accepted the Lord, then they could continue sinning all they want to. Because after once saved, always saved, you can keep right on sinning. And if that is not the end result, look at our divorce rate in the Christian church. Look at our abortion rate in the Christian church. These are all people who say that they're Christians. They're not Christians. They've sold people a bill of goods. When you're a Christian, life is transformed. Yes, Christians are still going to make some mistakes, but there's tremendous repentance, whatever they, and a feeling that you've done something wrong, and immediately effort to change your ways. And of course the repentance is with tears, not simply with, well, I'll just go out and do it again. Or as a young man who raised in our community, who after writing books for Pat Robertson and Billy Graham and Jerry Falwell, came out of the closet and ran off and left his wife and children and announced he was homosexual. And he leads a homosexual movement. And when interviewed on Larry King Live, he was asked, well, aren't you what you're doing? I mean, living in a homosexual relationship, leaving your wife and children, isn't this sin? And his response was, well, once saved, always saved. Sure, it's sin, but once saved, always saved. I don't have to worry about my salvation. And that's the message we've been teaching in our churches, and that's Lucifer's lie. And so that is one reason why the ministers don't speak out. The other is, of course, many of them are actually Masons. 40% of Southern Baptist ministers in the South are Masons. And, of course, they've given their lives to Lucifer without even realizing it. Many of them think they're Christians, and yet, of course, they are doomed to eternal damnation unless they renounce their allegiance to Lucifer. And those are the oaths that they take when they first enter the lodge. And then, of course, the most tragic part of it is that we have many of the ministers who have far more fear of government than they have of God. They're so afraid of their 501c3 status that they won't speak out, even though they know they should. And finally, they're so afraid of their parishioners. They don't want to offend anybody. They've built big churches, you know, and they have to keep that money coming in, and they would rather sacrifice what they know is right than do, you know, than... and so that the money will continue coming in. And I think these are real problems. In my opinion, this is why the ministers aren't speaking out. And they should be. I mean, you go to the average church today, and they'll put on a program on cults, and they'll tell you how terrible the Jehovah's Witnesses are. And they'll tell you about the New Age, and they'll tell you about the Mormons. But, of course, they'll never tell you about the Masons, because they're afraid to.
And they'll never tell you about the fact that there's a one-world religion coming on the scene that's going to be an ecumenical movement, which they're part of. So,
right.
And again, yeah, the scriptures flow through my mind as you're talking there. I know that you said, once saved, always saved. The grace of God, it says in the Bible, will be turned into lasciviousness, a license to sin. So that's exactly what people will do. They'll trample on the grace of God, and they'll think they can sin. There were some others as you were talking to. But anyway, yes, we're living in the times of Noah and the times of Lot. And it's a time, high time, really, as Jesus said, that you wake up. And when you're asleep, if you look the definition of sleep up, it's an unconsciousness. You're not aware of what's happening around you. But it's high time you wake up, put on the armor of light, and put off the works of darkness.
I believe that you're really saved. You have eternal salvation. But most of the people who think they're saved really aren't saved. At least those are continuing sinning and living like most Christians are living today.
That, again, the Bible says just what you said, Dr. Stan, said in the latter days or the last days, church, Laodicean, they'll think they're rich, they're increased, they're in need of nothing, yet they're wretched, blind, naked, and poor. And God says, buy me fine gold, put on my raiments, and repent and turn back to me. And so, yes, the last days church he speaks of will think they're saved, they'll think they're rich, they think they have it all together, and it's called self-deception. As Jesus said, there'd be much deception. Not to get right into this next subject, because God said that you talked about the pastors and all their money and everything, but it's important to a lot of the listeners, the economy and everything, but and it says you can't serve two masters in the Bible. It says the love of money is the root of all evil, and like you said, many of these pastors have more desire for money. It says they will make the false prophets will make merchandise of the gospel, and they will use it as a means to make money. But anyway, the economy, another area that I watch every day and follow, and I know you do too, and you've researched it, and you've got many people on your program. What do you think is going to happen? Is it going to be a sudden collapse? Is it going to be this continual? You know, I thought this thing would collapse in the mid-80s. Here we are in 2002. They print the money, and it keeps going on. Or do you think it's just going to be this gradual destruction of our economy, or do you think that debt bubbles at such a point where we can't, it won't make it much longer? What do you think about the economy?
I think things are moving at an amazing, amazing pace, and we're just about ready to go to our half-hour break. But let me just point out that in a town, I really can't remember the name of it, somewhere up in Minnesota, I think it is, there's a Maytag plant that's been there for...
Indiana,
55 years. And, of course, it's closing it. Why? Because, well, we'll be back in just a moment to tell you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there listening to us across America, we hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And of course, when you do that, while you get our four best tapes of the month, you get our monthly newsletter. Of course, some people certainly, I know, are financially strapped now. I know a lot of our longtime supporters are having real problems, and we understand that. And so perhaps you'd like to just subscribe to the newsletter, or perhaps you can't even do that. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send it to you. Our September newsletter deals with an overview of how the administration is using the September 11th attack to take away our freedom. Our October newsletter is Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the 18th of September of this year. A testimony which was totally suppressed by the controlled media. And then, of course, our November newsletter, of which I really didn't like that well, and I've had more comments on it, simply as an introduction to what's going on today, and, of course, the introduction into the fiat money system, and, of course, the peril that we are in because of our financial system. And, of course, my December newsletter will begin to develop that, and we'll be glad to send you free copies of any of these. Just if you give us, if you haven't had a letter before, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or if you want that little pamphlet on the spiritual hierarchy, and you'll have to specifically ask for it, we'll send that to you free of charge, because we want you to have the information. We want you, of course, to be able to reach others. Or if you'd like to see that page from the DARPA, from Admiral Poindexter's internet page, where, of course, they put the satanic emblem, the pyramid cap on the all-seeing eye, looking out over the world. Very, very symbolic, of course, of what's going on, that this organization being set up by the Pentagon for surveillance of the American people and to compile dossiers on all of them in the name of fighting terrorism, should have a satanic emblem at the top. And that it's interesting that they must have had the little pangs of guilt about it, or maybe fear that the stupid Americans might even wake up because they pulled it down. But fortunately, we do have a copy of that, and we'll make that available to you if you request it. But we want you to get the information out. You out there in the listening audience, that's your job. That's your obligation, is to talk to others, show them our material. You can pull it down off the internet site, and we're going to be putting other things up there that will be important for you to get out. We will ask you to tell people about our website at radioliberty.com. Get them going there and listening to our internet programs. Write to your friends and relatives and your high school chums and say start listening to Radio Liberty on a regular basis. Learn what's really going on while there's still time, and understand this true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently engaged. So remember again the number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course, just before we went to the vacation, David asked me what I thought about was going to happen. The Maytag plant that's been there for 50 years in this community has picked up and is moving to Mexico. They can hire people there for $2 an hour, in contrast to the $15.50 an hour that they have to pay there. It's Indiana, probably is. Dave remembers that. In other words, as they said, look, we can't compete with other people manufacturing refrigerators. We've got to cut our labor costs. And that's absolutely true. You have to understand that was the original plan. To destroy the American economy. That's why our government subsidized and actively encouraged major industries to move offshore and then lowered the tariffs so that, of course, they could bring the products that they made more cheaply back in here to destroy our remaining factories so they would be forced to move offshore. And I think that, David, what you're going to see is massive layoffs all across the country. Goodyear, Honeywell are having layoffs. Certainly Boeing is, and many of our airplane manufacturers are going to have to cut back. Right now, of course, Ford Motor Company lost a couple of billion dollars last year. They lost a couple of billion dollars this year. General Motors is anticipating a 12% reduction in market share this coming year. And, of course, they're facing a $29 billion pension fund debt. There's about $100 billion that our major corporations owe their pension funds. And, of course, some of them are going to try to get away with, get around that by putting their own stock in there, but that just increases the value of their stock by diluting it even further. And basically, if you, Citicorp has written off, I think, almost $2.5 billion of debts because many of the major corporations they have lent to aren't going to pay them back. Bank of America is writing off. And this is just in the last quarter this year. Citicorp, I think, is $2.5 billion. Certainly, I know Bank of America is $1.5 billion just in the last quarter. In other words, these are bad debts because Argentina isn't paying, Enron isn't paying, WorldCom isn't paying. All this money is disappearing. We have a system of money that's built upon debt. And people don't understand that money really is nothing but debt. You buy a house, you borrow $100,000 to buy the house becomes of the collateral for the money that is created out of nothing. And for you, if you don't understand our monetary system, you'll want to get my December newsletter where we explain how the whole system works. And, of course, what everybody else has missed, and that is the occult foundation for our monetary system. Which of now, of course, is going to eventually lead to the destruction of this country. We're moving towards deflation, and, of course, the logical thing for government to do is simply turn on the printing presses. When they do that, and they're already massively expanding liquidity, what the average American has never been told is that over the last 3 years, seeing what was happening, the Fed, working with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, increased our debt level by $5 trillion. That was in just a period of 3 years. Now, our national debt is about $6.3 trillion at the present time. It took almost 190 years to go from a national debt of zero to a national debt of $1 trillion. Now, then we have the national debt, then we have the total debt of our nation, which includes national, all the other debts upon which our monetary increments are based. And our current federal total debt is $30.9 trillion. And these figures will all be in my newsletter. And we have these figures from the Federal Reserve System. But, and it was the most amazing thing to look back to 1999, 3 years ago, when our total debt was $25.5 trillion. They've increased $5.5 trillion of debt in the last 5 years in an effort to stave off the deflation, and it hasn't done any good. So they're going to turn on the printing presses. They're going to destroy the value of the American dollar, and the people foolish enough to have their money in any monetary increment are going to be simply wiped out. This is what it's all about. And we're in for some very, very difficult times. And I believe that the major reason we are so anxious to get into the Iraqi war, and maybe into a war with North Korea at this time, will be, of course, as a diversion for the financial collapse that's coming. And then, of course, we will be able to blame the tragedy, not on the policies of our privately owned central bank, which we call the Federal Reserve System, but upon the wicked Saddam Hussein, the wicked Osama bin Laden and the wicked rulers of North Korea.
No more than an extension of the CIA is what they are, Dr. Stan. I'm just finishing up the editing of my latest video called Welcome to the Third World War, and in that I did an economic update. And you're fairly accurate on Mexico, but I've got articles that say they make $3 a day average in Mexico, and they're concerned because the shoe factories and all those factories are going to China where they have $1 a day labor, as well as slave labor over there where we deal with their slave labor. So I also have another article that says there's an economist saying that 70% of American manufacturing will be exported by the end of 2002. So,
and I think what people must understand is that we have a gross domestic product of about $10.5 trillion every year, but only about probably less than 25% of that is industrial. All the rest of it is service jobs and your speculation, but it's built upon nothing, you know, buying and selling property, you know. But this is not the sort of sound financial base that you can build upon. And now even many of our service jobs are being shipped overseas. John Leffler was commenting the other day. He called his local public utility to find out when they were going to be working, power lines, as I remember. And, of course, the man commented it was going to be as soon as possible. John asked him where his office was. It was in Calcutta, India. He was calling a man in Calcutta, answering telephone for his local utility. And large numbers of our service jobs and our telemarketing jobs are going overseas. These were the jobs that might have paid $6, $7, $8 an hour here, or whether they can get them for $1 an hour over in Calcutta. And these are intelligent people. And this is what our leaders are doing, is transferring our wealth overseas. They want to raise the living standards of the average American to that of the Mexican peasant. And believe me, that's exactly what they're doing. And you only need to read Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. And in that they say, well, if we're going to maintain a population that we have today of 6 billion, then we're going to have to lower everybody's living standards to that of the Eastern European. And, of course, that's a peasant status. That's what they plan to do here in the United States. But they don't want the American people to realize that. Or maybe next time around why we'll elect a Democrat. But nothing's going to change because they control both political parties. And when you understand that, and you understand they control the media, and they can control the banking, and they control many of our great corporations, and those that they don't control, they're able to manipulate through their financial machinations, or, of course, economically, as they are with Maytag. And so many of our other major corporations are just picking up and moving overseas, because they are being encouraged to by our government. Leaders are not dedicated to preserving our standard of life, living or standard of life. They're dedicated to the New World Order and the New World Religion and equality throughout the world, except, of course, for the ruling elite. And, of course, they'll always live well.
Right. Now, Dr. Stan, I know you did an excellent book on the Brotherhood of Death and, on the Brotherhood of Darkness. And our president belongs to this group called Skull and Bones, otherwise as I've heard it referred to as Brotherhood of Death, the Sister Society, the Tool Society, which Hitler was. Are these societies really as dangerous as we, you know, we talk about them on the radio, or are they just innocent little men's groups where they get together and have a good time together?
Well, I think that some of the people there are simply there for good times. Some people, let's just take the Skull and Bone Society. They take in 15 people every year into Skull and Bones. Now, a lot of people go in because this is a way of getting ahead. You enter Skull and Bones, you're made for life. I mean, you're going to get a good job with banking, or you'll get to be a corporate executive or university president, or you may even get to be president of the United States. We've had 3 Skull and Bones presidents. In fact, George Bush has recently brought a new man into the SEC. His name is Donaldson. Would you believe he's a member of Skull and Bones? And,
yes.
Of course, Bush has brought all sorts of Skull and Bones people into his administration. They all help one another. It's one for all and all for one. But the leadership of this, the originators and the people within this organization who understand the occult concepts that are involved in this. Because, of course, the real goal of the Skull and Bones is a new world order and a new world religion. And I don't believe every one of these is a Luciferian, but I believe there are Luciferians among them. I don't know exactly who they are, but I suspect that the people, the real leaders, the ones who go into the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, which is a totally evil organization, and of course they, this is organized murder incorporated. They simply murder anybody they want to with impunity. They murdered John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Never could have been done without the knowledge and support of the CIA and the FBI, for that matter. But then, of course, J. Edgar Hoover hated the Kennedys, and anybody wants to know how this whole thing fits together, why you really ought to get the book Double Cross. And there, a book written by Chuck Giancano, Radio Liberty carries out, the brother of San Giancano, tells you that the mafia were approached by the CIA to kill an American president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And, of course, we have the book Regicide, the memoirs, the information that came from Robert Crowley, who was the assistant director of covert operations for the CIA, where he readily admits, we killed Kennedy. Of course, he wasn't released until after his death. Have you heard that reviewed on ABC or CBS or NBC. It's, in fact, the book is very hard to get. It's available through Radio Liberty. But you have to understand that really what we're up against today. And that is, there are many organizations. We have the Council on Foreign Relations. A lot of people are in the Council on Foreign Relations. They think that, you know, this is a way of getting ahead, and it is a way of getting ahead. And you get to hear the president talk, and you get to hear, you know, the attorney general talk. And, of course, you get promoted to very good positions, not necessarily on your ability, but, of course, who you know. But, of course, you are indoctrinated with this idea that you're part of the elite. And our objective, of course, is to help the people by creating a new world order and a new world religion. And, of course, there are a lot of people who are swept along with this, and I'm sure that of those who show promise are taken into the inner sanctum and are told what this is really all about. It's, frankly, Luciferian.
Absolutely. In fact, Dr. Stan, I've got an article here. It's sort of interesting. In September 2002, USA Today, it says, White House Bonesman leads a nation in the dark. And Jesus said, I never did anything in darkness. I did everything in the light. And so I have my own opinion. I did a tape called Mason's Friend or Foe, and I believe that people that belong to those societies ought to get out of them as soon as they can. If not sooner, they must repent. For without repentance, there is no forgiveness of sins. Another question, Dr. Stan. You've got a bunch of listeners, and I know your listeners have access to all your resources. You've got people all day long that speak and have spent many, many hours. I know the tapes I spend. Many times I spend thousands of dollars and thousands of hours to come out with one of the presentations, and I know you carry four or five or six of mine. And
I'm going to carry that new one, too, and as soon as you send me a copy.
Absolutely. I'll get that up to you. But here it says... the next question I have for you is, what happened to the American people? Is it because they're afraid? Is it because they're desensitized? I mean, why no action? I mean, we can have a meeting, and you had a meeting, a good turnout, and I think you brought in 160 people out of how many people live in that area?
I don't know, but I was pleased to have 160 there. There were a lot of people that liked it.
I know you're pleased to have that, but we're talking about such a small percentage of American people.
But you see, David, the thing is that they're not getting the truth. I mean, how do we reach the people with the truth? And then, of course, you can reach the people with the truth, but many times they're spiritually blinded. And I believe that Lucifer has blinded them so they can't see the truth. But all we can do is hope that something we say, or maybe something you will say, or one of the other guests will say, will touch their heart. And right now we have about 50 outlets for our programs across America every single week. And God has certainly given us the opportunity to have an outreach like this. And, I never know what I may say that will make somebody stop and think. But God is going to lead them to those radio programs if he wants them to. Just as I was 40 years ago, I went home, and I was going to turn on my television. I was going to watch The Naked City, and I got the wrong program. And I watched the wrong program of an old man talking about a lot of things I wasn't even interested in. And that program changed my life. And all I can say is that we're going to have to win the people back one at a time, but it's the people God gives us. Now, there's no easy way to do this, and all we can do is continue doing our best and knowing that we're not alone. I mean, I can give you the names of a dozen conservative talk show hosts across America with larger or smaller audiences, but they're all getting out the same basic message of the spiritual nature of the battle we're in. Maybe they don't have all of my historical background and all the facts we have, but their message is very, very similar. Certainly David Smith has an excellent ministry, John Loeffler, Chuck Christmeyer. We could go down the list of the people that are out there on the front lines getting the information out. Maybe they only got one station. I did Michael Dresser's program yesterday up in Alaska, and Michael's on a secular station. But, I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people who weren't Christians, who think that maybe Christianity is even wrong, but I had at least the opportunity to introduce this whole idea of the spiritual battle. And, what an awesome responsibility it is for you and I as we go on the airwaves and know the people, we don't know who they are listening. What we need to do is expand our ministry, and we're hoping to begin to do that and work on that the first of the year. And with God's help and with the help of the people out there who believe in what we're doing or willing to support us, I hope we're going to be able to really begin to massively to expand what we do. Why won't people listen? I believe Lucifer blinds them. How will we get through to them? God will bring them to the program and open their eyes, maybe just for a moment, and they'll hear something, and it will strike a chord. And there was a poem I remember from many years ago. Upon one man's life it is, let's see, upon one man's life it hath fallen a light that doth not depart, and a look or a word he hath spoken wrought a flame in another man's heart. And let's just hope that something that you or I say can light a flame in other people's hearts.
Well, I do want to thank you for your program, Dr. Stan. I know you're dedicated, a man that works many, many hours. And also, it isn't just you. It isn't just your volunteers. It's the listeners that actually support you that provide those 50 stations. So thanks to them, too.
Don't forget my wife, totally dedicated, without whom I couldn't do what I do, and my son, and, of course, our small staff that we have, who worked really tirelessly here to try to make Radio Liberty a real effective force in this battle for righteousness in America.
Absolutely. One more question, and then if you have a question, if we have time. The question is, the New World Order, the Prince of Darkness has his plans to put together this New World Order. Some people say it's already put together, but it's not really instigated. Do you think it'll ever be completely put together before Jesus interrupts the plans of these people that are caught up in darkness and following Lucifer's ways?
Well, of course, it really doesn't matter what I think. It's what the Bible tells us, that God has told us and decreed. And yes, Lucifer will, for a time, reign, and he thinks he's going to defeat God, but I got news for him. He's in for a big surprise. Yes, I think that this whole thing is going to come together. At what point will it come together during my life? Is it coming together right at this time? I don't know. All I know is that the Bible tells us that Lucifer will accomplish this, certainly then his disciple. And people have to understand that there is a trinity of good, God, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. There is a trinity of evil. It is Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet. And, of course, the Antichrist will rise with Lucifer's power, and, of course, unite the world under his rule. And, of course, they will sign a peace treaty with Israel. And, of course, for the first 3.5 years, everything is going to be great. And they're going to rebuild the temple. And then Lucifer is going to announce, or I should say the Antichrist is going to announce, that he indeed is God. And then, of course, things are really going to get bad at that point.
Absolutely. And it says he gives the power, God gives power to the Antichrist for a period of time to overcome the saints. So there's going to be persecution, there's going to be martyrdom, there's going to be actually guillotine, because people will be headed for their faith. It talks about that in the Bible. And those days, I believe, are still ahead. And an interesting article in the paper today, the Orange County Register, Dr. Stan, I'm looking at it. It says, Trans-Afghan Pipeline Project Near Realization. It says, the final details for the ambitious deal to build a gas pipeline through war-ravaged Afghanistan. The long-delayed billion natural gas pipeline known as Trans-Alaskan Pipeline will carry gas from rich Turkmenistan to the Pakistan down to the Gulf. So they accomplished one of their purposes, it looks like, or they're working on accomplishing that purpose, and that's to build that pipeline so they can, through Afghanistan. That was one of the reasons I show in one of my tapes about the 9/11 event. Not the major reason, because the major reason is, as Gary Hart said so well, hopefully out of this we can put together what George Bush Sr. talked about in New World Order. So, again, we're living in very precarious times. 2003 is going to be a very interesting time, I believe. I would ask the listeners to pray for an extra measure of discernment, an extra measure of wisdom, because this is a time we need to be able to discern. We need to be able to examine ourselves and see where we're doing, Dr. Stan, because it's definitely an evil time. It's a very deceptive time, and I appreciate you answering those questions. Each person probably has their own opinion. I think you're probably one of the most knowledgeable guys in the country, not only because of your history of studying all the history you've done, but also just the very fact that you're on the firing line 5 hours a day, 6-7 days a week. I mean, when you're that involved, I know I do research probably 4 or 5 hours a day, but not on the radio, where I'm discussing with some experts in a lot of different fields, whether it be education or foreign affairs or economy or whatever. It's just it's got to be a wealth of knowledge that you come in contact with every day, and praise God for that, that you have the radio program. And I just pray the listeners will take advantage of the resources that you have there. They'll support you while they're there. A lot of them say, what can I do? There's nothing I can do. Well, there sure is something they can do. They can help support a ministry that gets out truth. I know there won't be a lot of people who want to hear the truth, because it says that in the latter days people won't have a love of the truth. It says that they'll raise up teachers that'll tickle their itching ears. We talked about that a little earlier, and they'll hate truth. In fact, it sort of reminds me of that little kid that where the emperor put on his clothes and he came to town. It was a little farm boy that came to town and saw the emperor naked. And he says the emperor has no clothes, and first thing the people wanted to do was hurt the little boy, and then the good people raised up. And I hope the good people that are listening to the station raise up and help that little boy, help that voice in the wilderness that sounds out and is warning the people. And I tell people at all my presentations, not just the fact that you learn all this stuff, great. It's good to know all about all the deception, all the conspiracy, all the things. But if you don't know Jesus Christ, you're just going to be the smartest people and the smartest person in hell there is. You're going to be there with many of the people that you probably disdain for the plans that they're planning against you and you and your family. And I pray you wouldn't disdain them. I'd ask you to pray for them, because God says we're to even love our enemies. We're to love those that despitefully use us. And that we can't do in and of ourselves. That can only be done by the power of the Holy Spirit. And as we yield to Jesus Christ, as we do it His way, only He gives us that ability to do that supernatural. And those are two supernatural things. Let me tell you, Dr. Stan, to love our enemies and do good to those spitefully use us.
Dave, I'm going to have to interrupt you here. Let's get your telephone number out for Hope for America. My guest has been Dave Wagner, or I'm not sure whether he was my guest or I was his, but I wanted to get your telephone number out there. How can people get hold of you?
Okay, the phone number here is 800-959-1991. You'll get a resource. If you leave your name, address, city, state, and zip code carefully and slowly, it will pick it up, and we'll get a resource packet off to you. I got about 14 multimedia videos. That means I'll show you clips. I'll show you slides. Everything I say is backed up by authority sources that are much more knowledgeable, many times leaders of the world that are saying the same things. They've laid this thing out. There are lies in the newspapers every day right next to the truth. One thing God's given the ability, Dr. Stan, and is to find that truth. It's a very small percentage of the truth that's in the paper, but there is some. And we must have eyes to see that. But again, thank you, and God bless you and Barbara and your whole staff there for everything you do. And these are great days to be praying for each other, encouraging each other, and I do that for all my listeners and all the people that support Hope for America, and I know you do it for yours, too. And God bless and keep you, and thank you.
God bless you. Good night, Dave.
Good night.
Bye-bye. And I hope you enjoyed the program with Dave. And it was a little unusual. Dave just called me before the program and said, hey, how about if I ask you questions tonight? So, I got a chance to answer a few of his questions. I hope you enjoyed the program. And please, of course, pray for Dave and his ministry. And pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you, remember that this is a spiritual battle. We're to do our best, and in the final analysis, it'll be God's doing, however things turn out. So until Monday, may the Lord be with you.
Isn't that exciting, you know, that
Can they replace a little park there? Because
it's so much that we've got that they haven't got.
And I just want you to get a chance to talk to them.
Yeah, I told you it would be short. So this is very short right there. Now, Jim and I got invited to the Masonic Lodge on Saturday.
Really?
And it's a friend that we've